Well, the life of Elisha, part 9. Now, last week we looked at the healing of Naaman. Remember, wash and be clean. And of course, Naaman is not just made clean on the outside, he's washed clean on the inside. Naaman is saved. He abandons gods, which are no gods, to love and worship the Lord, the only God there is. But that's not the end of the story. Because the account now takes a dramatic turn. We read verse 20, but Gehazi, the servant of Elisha. And the account which begins with Naaman, the leper, ends with Gehazi, the leper. So what we'll do is we'll open up verses 20 to 27 of 2 Kings chapter 5. We'll draw out the lessons about Gehazi's greed. But we're not yet finished with chapter 5. God willing, we'll return there again next week, because there's a very big lesson from the chapter which we need to learn. So please have in front of you 2 Kings chapter 5 verses 20 to 27. And let's find out what the passage is saying, and then we'll draw the lessons. So verse 20, but Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, look, my master has spared Naaman the Syrian while not receiving from his hands what he brought. But as the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him. Now, do you remember? The leper, Naaman, he arrives at Elisha's door with this massive gift, verse 5. It really is huge. We're told it's 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. Well, 10 talents of silver is about 340 kilos of silver. If you think in the old money, that's 53 stone. And 6,000 shekels of gold is 90 kilos of gold. That's about 14 stone. It's huge, isn't it? It's a massive gift. Why the gift? Well, it's to pay for his healing. Every god has his price. If you want a really good deal, you must be prepared to pay for it. Well, verse 14, Naaman is healed. He's forgiven. He's changed. It's much more than outward healing. It's a thorough, complete, total, through and through healing. The man is saved. And when verse 15, he insists on giving this gift to Elisha, Elisha is adamant. No, verse 16, but he said, as the Lord lives, before whom I stand, I will receive nothing. So he actually takes an oath, and he urged him to take it, but Elisha refused. Why does Elisha refuse? Because the Lord is not like the gods of the pagans. He can't be bribed, he can't be bought. And therefore, this young believer must be clear. God's grace, God's salvation is free. The whole cost of Naaman's healing, the whole cost of Naaman's salvation is put to God's account. Naaman, your healing is a gift. It's free. It's God's free, extravagant, overflowing love towards a wretched, guilty leper like you. Because that's just the God that he is. That's what he's like. The God of grace, the God of love, the God of surpassing kindness to sinners. So there must be no misunderstandings. This is not something you've paid for. This is a gift. This is God's doing from beginning to end. As the Lord lives before whom I stand, I will receive nothing. He urged him to take it, but Elisha refused. So all that's going on. But someone's watching. And Gehazi can't believe his ears. He's looking at Elisha and thinking, Elisha, have you gone soft? All this fabulous wealth, just a fraction of it, would set us up for the rest of our lives. And you're saying no? You know, here we are with nothing. We wear the same old clothes day in, day out. We carry all that we possess in two Tesco shopping bags. We have to do everything for ourselves. And here's the chance of a lifetime. And all you can say is no. Elisha, what planet are you on? Well, if my master is determined to let this opportunity get away, I certainly won't. Look, my master has spared Naaman the Syrian while not receiving from his hands what he brought. But as the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him. Do you hear that? It says, this Syrian. He doesn't see a believer, he sees a foreigner. As the Lord lives. So he uses the Lord's name as a cover for his sin. What blasphemy. Well, verse 21 puts it nicely. So Gehazi pursued Naaman. Gehazi's in a hurry. He's working up a sweat. He's got a big red face. He's running as fast as he can. He's in a panic. It's almost like a silent movie, isn't it? You can imagine the piano playing. And there's Gehazi running after the chariot. The money's getting away from him. Faster, faster. And Naaman turns. He sees. And the next scene is touching and also unbearable. So Gehazi pursued Naaman. When Naaman saw him running after him, he got down from the chariot to meet him and said, is all well? Naaman gets down from his chariot. It's an act of deference, respect, honor. Gehazi is Elisha's servant, and Naaman treats him like royalty. Is all well? This new convert brimming, isn't he, with goodwill and love. But he's about to be duped. And he said, all is well. And now verse 22, the lie. My master has sent me, saying, indeed, just now two young men of the sons of the prophets have come to me from the mountains of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver and two changes of garments. Gehazi puts words in Elisha's mouth. He misrepresents his master. And he tells a very plausible story, doesn't he? Two men, two servants of the Lord. An urgent and unexpected need. I don't need anything really, but you know, if you could just spare one talent of silver, two changes of clothing, that'd be really helpful. Christian friends, don't lies sound so kind and so reasonable and so spiritual? Aren't lies believable? But it's still a lie. And verse 23, our hearts sink further as Naaman bends over backwards to help. Remember who this is? This is a young believer. It's a young believer with all his enthusiasm, with all his love for the Lord, all his love for the Lord's prophet, and he's being conned. Don't just take one talent of silver, take two. And let my men carry it for you. Verse 24. When he came to the citadel, he took them from their hand and stored them away in the house. They let the men go and they departed. Christian friends, I wonder what Gehazi thought. I'll never see Naaman again. Elisha knows nothing. No harm has been done. I think he just lifted from him two talents of silver. He's gone with most of the money. This is a secret matter. No one need ever know. Do you ever think like that? But Gehazi, there are at least two witnesses to your deception. God and your conscience. And even if your conscience is silent, God won't be. Verse 25, now he went in and stood before his master. Elisha said to him, where did you go, Gehazi? And he said, your servant didn't go anywhere. Now, if you look through the chapter 5, the words stood before, they appear a number of times in the chapter. Something we'll look at, God willing, next week. It's making a point. People keep standing before other people. So verse 2, we read the little girl, literally she stands before Naaman's wife. It says in our translation she waited on Naaman's wife, but in the original she stands before Naaman's wife. Verse 15, Naaman stands before Elisha. Verse 16, Elisha stands before the Lord. And now here, Gehazi stood before his master. But the standing before here is a different word than the word that is used in the rest of the chapter. Now, when I was a teacher and I had to deal with bad behaviour, you might get a little knot of lads who had agreed on their story. So how do you get to the truth? What do you do? Well, let's say there were three lads. I put the three lads in three separate empty rooms. You leave them in there for a while to sweat. And then I go into them one after the other. And I go into them and I would say to the first one, or to the second one, or to the third one, say the same thing, tell me what happened. But make sure you don't lie. Remember, you don't know if I've spoken to the others. You don't know what the others have said to me. So you make sure that you tell me the truth. And even if two stuck to the story, there'd always be one who spilt the beans. Now the point is, these lads stood before me. The relationship was asymmetrical. I was the teacher. But though they stood before me, they didn't want to be there. Everything about them said, I don't want to be here. They'd avoid eye contact. They'd have their heads down. They'd often be surly because they knew they'd done wrong. And that's the sense of the word used here in verse 25. In all the other times the word stand before, stood before is used, it's speaking of a willing service. But now the word is different. It speaks of unwilling service. Gehazi doesn't want to be there. He'd rather be anywhere else in the world than now standing before Elisha. Because he knows what he's done. And you pick it up in his words, don't you? Verse 25, he went in and stood before his master. Elisha said to him, where did you go, Gehazi? And this is like a schoolboy answer, isn't it? And he said, your servant did not go anywhere. I've done nothing wrong. Verse 26, then he said to him, did not my heart go with you when the man turned back from his chariot to meet you? Is it time to receive money and to receive clothing, olive groves and vineyards, sheep and oxen, male and female servants? Gehazi, I know. I've seen it. I was there. And far from behaving like a servant, you've been acting like a master. And far from helping others, you've been helping yourself. So if you want something from Naaman, then take his leprosy. Verse 27, therefore the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and your descendants forever. And he went out from his presence leprous, as white as snow. Having acted in secret, your punishment will be public. Having been unclean on the inside, you will now be seen to be unclean on the outside. God is not mocked. So, Christian friends, what do you think? Does the punishment fit the crime? So what are we to learn? What is Gehazi's sin? What is it that he's done? Well, he takes God's name in vain, verse 20. As the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him. He bears false witness. He tells lies. Verse 22, my master has sent me, saying, indeed, just now two young men of the sons of the prophets have come to me from the mounds of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver and two changes of garments. And he covets. That's what's driving the whole narrative, isn't it? He's a coveter. He covets Naaman's silver and gold. And it's spelled out in Elisha's words in verse 26. Is it time to receive money and to receive clothing, olive groves and vineyards, sheep and oxen, male and female servants? So Gehazi, he breaks commandments 3, 9 and 10. So what's the lesson? Don't break commandments 3, 9 and 10. Happy with that? Okay, well, let's sing the last hymn. But wait a minute. If the servant of Elisha can fall into such sin, And Christian friends, so can we all. We need to dig deeper. What is the path that Gehazi takes? Am I this morning walking the same path? What are the dimensions of Gehazi's sin? And am I in danger of doing the same? So why did he do it? Because he was annoyed. Look at verse 20 again. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, "Look, my master has spared Naaman the Syrian while not receiving from his hands what he brought." He's annoyed with Elisha, isn't he? He's even cross. Maybe he's angry with Elisha. Elisha's standing in the way of what Gehazi wants. You're letting Naaman walk away with the money. Now, what does that tell you? It tells you that Gehazi has stopped looking to the Lord. He no longer sees that God is the one to make him happy. It's that money. That's where his true happiness lies. I can't trust God to supply my needs. And therefore I must take control. As the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him. So, Christian friend, are you annoyed with someone today? Be honest. Who have you been thinking about? You know, you sit in the bath, you have a conversation in your head with someone, don't you? And they're there and you're... Who are you annoyed with? Is it because they've got in the way of what you want? Are they standing between you and your happiness? And therefore you feel you've got to take control. What's lying under it is that you are not looking to the Lord. You don't see him as the one who has ordered your life and ordered your plans and ordered your circumstances. It's them, though, that person standing in the way of my happiness. Be very careful. Are you annoyed with someone? Are they getting in the way? Then you're walking the same path as Gehazi. Why did he do it? Well, because he's fed up with being a servant. But verse 26, I could be the master. Do you think he's walking with the servant king? So, Christian friend, are you fed up with serving? Have you stopped walking with the servant king? Are you looking for recognition? Are you fed up with being treated like a nobody? And it's time people recognize that you are a somebody. And maybe you feel you've been passed over. And now you see you've seen your chance, haven't you? You've seen your chance to take control, to turn the tables, to reverse the situation. Is Satan softening you up? Dissatisfied with the way things are? I'm bigger, I'm more important, I should be the master. Then you're walking the same path as Gehazi. Why did he do it? We see the seed has been sown, the thought has taken root. He's not looking to the Lord, he's thinking of himself. I deserve better. And now I've found a solution. And sin never looked so attractive, did it? Look at what the way Elisha puts it. You know, what you can do with that money? Well, is it time to receive money, to receive clothing, olive groves and vineyards, sheep and oxen, male and female servants? That's what he can do with the money. Now, when Elisha says, is it time? Well, he's saying, yes, there will come a time when the servants of the Lord will be rewarded. They will have abundance, but that time is not now. Because I can't wait until then. He wants it now. And his desire is giving birth to sin. What I could do with that money. Do you see what's going on in his mind? He believes that there is more gain in sin than there is in serving God. There's more pleasure in sin than in the enjoyment of God. That sin, this course of action, promises a freedom which God will never give to him. So again, Christian friend, are you walking on that path? It's madness, isn't it? What sin can match the pleasures of God? But you see what happens. We stop communing with God. And we're drawn. And we're fed up with waiting for the glory that is to come. We want something now. And therefore sin never looks so attractive. Have you got your eye on something? What's it promising you? Is it freedom? Is it promising you life? Do you feel energized by it? Is it promising you change? I can get out of this situation and make a new life, a new way, a new focus. Whatever it promises you, it can never promise you the answer of a good conscience. Why did he do it? Well, because sin looked small, didn't it? You know, I don't want the whole lot, verse 20. As the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him. I just want something. Again, Christian friend, are you on that path? A small sin. Oh, I don't want to commit adultery. I just want to see them again. I'll just walk this way rather than that way because I know I'll see them again and then I can get involved in a conversation with them. And I don't want to go any further. I just want a conversation with them. I just like talking to them. How can we speak of small sins when we offend an infinite God? Is there a little hell with little torments for little sinners? And anyway, Christian friend, if this sin is so small, why jeopardize my walk with God for something like that? Why did he do it? Because he thought he could get away with it, didn't he? He really did. Of course you can get away with it. I mean, after all, Naaman's going to Syria. I'm not going to see him again. He's not going to tell anybody. Elisha is wherever Elisha is at the moment. He's not here. So no one will ever know. Again, Christian friend, are you walking that path? Are you so far from God that you think that God doesn't see? Are you so far from God that you think that God won't make it public, this secret sin? That God won't bring it to light? Remember, secret sins, there are always two witnesses. God and your conscience. So we're digging a bit deeper, aren't we? Yeah? I mean, we can answer all these questions. We've all been there in different ways. And it's only the mercy of God that's kept me from going down that path. And sometimes a last-minute intervention of God has rescued me. We've all been down it, haven't we? But are you walking down that path this morning? Are you walking that path with Gehazi? Are you closer than you realize to a fall? And think of the dimensions of Gehazi's sin. Verse 21. So Gehazi pursued Naaman. When Naaman saw him running after him, he got down from the chariot to meet him and said, "Is all well?" And he said, "All is well. My master has sent me, saying, 'Indeed, just two young men of the sons of the prophets have come to me from the mountains of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver and two changes of garments.'" So he misrepresents Elisha. Now in that Eastern culture, there was a ritual reluctance to accept gifts. So someone would say, "Take the gift." You say, "No." "Take it." "No." "Take it." "No." "Take it." "All right then, you force me into it." And maybe Naaman thinks that's exactly what Elisha's doing. Okay, he's carrying it a bit far. For all Naaman knows, this story of these two young men is just a polite invention just to get some money back from Naaman. Christian friends, your sin is never private. It will impact upon the Naamans and the Elishas around you. It will misrepresent the servants of God. It will sow doubts in the minds of young believers. And maybe that's already happened. Getting what you want has damaged your family and your friends and the church. Nobody knows about it because they don't know how things might be otherwise if this thing hadn't happened. But because you've done what you've done, things are now the way that they are. But the worst thing about Gehazi's sin is that it misrepresents the Lord. Now, when I was a boy, every year my family paid for a mass to be said for the soul of Florence Hemings, my grandmother. She died. And when I asked, why did we do that? Back would come the reply, it was to speed Granny's journey through purgatory and into heaven. So what did I learn? I learned that even God has his price. That if you want to get to heaven quickly, you can pay for it. You know, you can jump the queue. If you've got enough money, you can jump the queue and get more quickly into heaven. Salvation comes down to money. But that's not the gospel, is it? Which is why Elisha is determined to take nothing from Naaman. As the Lord lives, he puts himself under an oath. Before whom I stand, I will receive nothing. He urged him to take it, but he refused. Because this young believer must understand that salvation is God's gift. You pay nothing. God meets the whole cost of our salvation himself. But you see, with Gehazi's intervention, that message has been distorted. When Naaman arrives home and everyone asks, who healed you? And he says, the Lord. And then they ask, because they're all good pagans, and they say, well, how much did it cost you? What's Naaman going to say? I thought it was free, but hang on a minute. I've just parted with 2 talents of silver. Is God a taker or a giver? Is salvation mainly God's doing, but, you know, I have to sort of pay my fare, 2 talents of silver? That thought's been sown in his mind, hasn't it? There's confusion. This new convert is perhaps now not so clear as he was in the first place, but now he's not so clear about the gospel. Maybe the Lord's not quite as loving and quite as generous as I first thought. I've got to pay my way to a measure. And now what sort of gospel will the confused Naaman preach to the Syrians around him when he goes back and speaks to his wife and he comes to tell her about the gospel, about the God who makes us clean? What sort of gospel is he going to say? Because somewhere in his mind a thought has been sown. And what sort of life will a confused Naaman live? Ask yourself the question, who's going to be more devoted to God? The Naaman who wonders if he's contributed to his cure, or the Naaman who knows the Lord has done it all? If you think that in some way you've contributed to your salvation, then you will set thresholds to your consecration, won't you? You think, well, I paid for some of this. God can't expect everything from me because I've made a contribution. I've paid my fare. But if it really is all his doing, I've done nothing. I have been the recipient of this wonderful, overwhelming, lavish kindness. Then what effect will that have on a young Christian? The young Christian will say, I owe to God everything. There's nothing that he can't ask of me. I owe him it all. As C.T. Studd said, if Jesus Christ be God and died for me, then no sacrifice can be too great for me to make for him. And we sing it regularly, don't we? Love so amazing, so divine, demands my soul, my life, my all. That's the gospel, isn't it? That's the wonder of the grace of God. If he's done it all, then I give everything back to him. And it turns us into happy, willing, joyful servants of God. What can I do for him? I'll do anything for him, because of what he's done for me. But now Gehazi's gone and distorted that message, hasn't he? He's sown a doubt. He's put in a tear. It's not quite the gospel of grace, is it? Because Naaman thinks that maybe I've made a contribution to this healing. And Gehazi's misrepresented the Lord at the very place where the glory of God shines at its brightest. That's the wickedness of what he's done. It's what it says about God. So maybe Gehazi's punishment is actually looking very merciful, isn't it? Isn't it? What have you done? Not just what he said, oh, I want to get this money. It's what he said about God. It's the gospel he's sending into Syria. It's distorted it, spoiled it, messed it up. It looks very merciful, doesn't it, leprosy? Because at least it gives him space to repent. He can come with a broken heart to God and find forgiveness. Well, Christian friends, as we close, what of you? Are you this morning, and have you been this last week, and have you been nurturing it maybe for months, are you contemplating a Gehazi? Are you walking the same path? Has Satan been softening you up? And you're heading for a fall? Are you already, as it were, running after the chariot? And you're red-faced, and you're breathless. You're running after the chariot before your hopes of happiness disappear. Have you stopped looking to the Lord? Are you annoyed with others? Come on, be honest. Is there someone you're angry with? Because they've got in the way of your happiness. Are you feeling sorry for yourself? Are you fed up with being a servant? Yeah, I've been doing it for years. What have I got to show for it? Have you seen your opportunity? Is sin looking attractive? Is in your mind this sin promising you more than God? If I go with this sin, it means life, happiness, change. I'll go with it. And you feel it's small. And you can get away with it. And already you're taking control without any regard for the impact that this will have upon others. And maybe you're treating the church like a piece of Lego. Yeah? You know, you're joined to the church, but when you do this, you can detach yourself from the church. You're like a piece of Lego. You can be pulled apart. So, yeah, I'm with the church here, but when I go and do this, I'm detached from the church. I'm a piece of Lego. I can do what I want. And no one in the church need ever know or be harmed by it. But we're not pieces of Lego, are we? We're organic. We're a body. You can't detach a hand. You can't detach a foot. You can't detach an eye. And it behaves on its own and can do what it wants. Whatever you do will affect everyone else. It'll affect the young believers because they're watching, looking, listening. I'll say, that's what following Christ is about. And it'll affect those who will weep for your soul. However secret it is, it affects every one of us. But worst of all, you go down that path, what will it say about the Lord? What will it say about the gospel? What will it say about his grace? What are you saying about his name? Are you taking his name in vain? A man and a woman marry. She takes her husband's name. Miss Johnson becomes Mrs. Jones. But one day, Mr. Jones comes home to find his wife with Mr. Smith. What sort of wife is she? She's called Mrs. Jones, but she doesn't live like Mrs. Jones, does she? She's unfaithful. She's taken his name in vain. She's behaving as though she is not his wife. And maybe, Christian friend, that's it. You call yourself a Christian. You call yourself a lover of Jesus Christ. The Jesus who made his life revolve around you. The Jesus who died on the cross for your sins. But where are you heading today? What are you up to? Why isn't your life revolving around him? What will your plans, words, actions say about Christ? Think about it now before you do it. What will it say about Christ? Are you taking his name in vain? Are you betrothed to this one and you've taken his name, but you're going to live as though you're unfaithful, that you belong to another? Is there more of Gehazi in what you're doing than Christ? Christian friend, whatever you're contemplating, whatever you're saying, whatever you're doing, what does it say about Jesus? I mean, we've got to be honest, haven't we? Who knows what plague you will bring on yourself and upon your family. Therefore, the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and your descendants forever. It's always very dangerous to say this, but has the living God been here this morning? Has he been speaking to you? Do you think this might be a message for you before it's too late? Maybe in the councils of your heart you've been planning and preparing something for years or for months. And the warning signs have been there. Christian friends have spoken to you, but you've not been listening. And you've been taking another path, and you're not walking closely with the Lord. And things which seemed unthinkable are now being thought of and considered and planned. And you think, I'm going to take control. There's more in this sin than I can find in God. What did Elisha say? He said, where did you go, Gehazi? At that point, Gehazi could have repented, couldn't he? He could have said and told him the whole truth. He could have named his sin for what it was. When Elisha says to him, where did you go? It was a voice of mercy, wasn't it? But he evades the issue. Your servants didn't go anywhere. Brothers, sisters, none of us knows what's really going on in each other's hearts, do we? But this message is a voice of mercy. Where did you go? Where did you go? Don't evade the issue. Come. Tell all. Confess. Tell Jesus all your sin. Name your sin for what it is in his presence. And come to the foot of the cross. Did he do all that for you? That you might continue down this path? Then let us sit beneath his cross and gladly catch the healing stream, all things for him account but loss, and give up all our hearts to him. Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your heart.